believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the show. Thank you for that wonderful round of applause. Please, thank you. It's June 16th, guys, Tuesday. And I've been reading story after story after story of what ends up being police abuse. All different types of things, from actual real-life trumping stuff up to people you don't like, to just essentially committing crimes, harming people, things such as that, with essentially unlimited immunity because the police department isn't going to effectively investigate it. And even if they do, then the district attorney's office is not going to file charges because they're going to have some form of excuse on that. And I really have a problem with that. Here's a little story. You know what, actually, it takes enough time where I'll read this, and then we'll get into the kind of the interrogative of it in a minute. Killing with impunity, a police prerogative. New Jersey State Trooper Robert Higby was in hot pursuit of revenue on September 26, 2006, almost 3 years ago, when he ran a stop sign and his cruiser collided with a minivan. At the time, Higby was speeding in pursuit of a speeder doing at least 65 miles an hour in a 35 zone. The collision, for which Higby was entirely to blame, took the lives of two passengers, 19-year-old Christina Becker and 17-year-old Jacqueline Baker. So two teenage girls. Had Higby been a productive private citizen, as opposed to a tax feeder of the enforced caste, he would almost certainly have been convicted of vehicular homicide. But thanks in part to the light touch of Superior Court Judge Raymond Batten and Cape May County Assistant Prosecutor David Meyer, a jury saw fit to acquit the trooper of the charge. The court then dismissed charges of careless driving and failing to stop or yield at a stop sign, downgrading the offense to a single charge of unsafe driving. Fines and court fees totaled $728, or $364 apiece for the two young women who were killed by Higby as he tried to apprehend someone whose irresponsible driving didn't take any lives that evening. The Philadelphia Inquirer coach, Judge Batten, is calling Higby a good person otherwise engaged in a lifetime of usefulness and doing good deeds, and insisting that any term of incarceration, quote, would yield no additional public unity, end quote. Now, had some mere mundane person killed one of the state's sanctified enforcers by running a stop sign, imagine what would have happened then. This is the sort of thing that really bothers me, having been a cop and seeing what happens on the inside when it comes to prosecution. We're going to have a little bit of discussion about this into the next segment when we come back from the break. If you happen to have any feelings to share or any experiences on this, please give me a call. Let's talk about this today. I just have a real issue with cops being held to a different standard when, in fact, they should be held to a tighter standard, having been one. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Stay tuned through the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me.
So, should police be allowed, should law enforcement, members of law enforcement, whatever state, county, city, federal, whatever, be allowed to go about whatever it is they want to do in the name of duty and get away with whatever happens? Now, if you're looking at a stop sign and you realize that going through the stop sign at a high rate of speed has the potential to take lives, just knowing that and doing it anyhow is, in a form, premeditated homicide, in my book, against an unknown victim. At least you've premeditated that you know what you're doing could cause lives. Now, you might get away with it and just book right through that stop sign. On the other hand, you may not. You may hit somebody. You may kill somebody. In this case, New Jersey State Trooper Robert Higby killed two teenage girls, Christina Becker and Jacqueline Becker, on September 26, 2006. Killed these two sisters. Imagine if you're the parents and your two daughters were killed by a police officer in pursuit of a speeder so he could write them a ticket and get a little bit more revenue in the county coffer. And that trooper had no legal repercussions of this, with the exception of careless driving. Is that what it was? Careless driving? Let me read this again. Unsafe driving. Pardon me. And that was it. Your two girls, your two daughters are dead at the hands of a police officer who was irresponsible in his duties, would have easily taken a person to jail had he seen them blow through a stop sign at 65 miles an hour, especially in a 35 zone. Any cop would take that person to jail, tow their car, and let them stay in jail for a night or two. Any cop would do that. However, this cop did that and killed somebody's two teenage daughters. And he walks away. Now, is that justice? The answer is no. When I was a police officer, we were held to a higher standard. Now, not all of the cops I worked with walked the higher road. I did. A lot of cops did. A lot of cops would take the higher road. Not all of them. A lot of them would take the low road. And those are the cops that, quite honestly, shouldn't be on the force. Have no business being on the force. It's real easy to figure out what cop should be on the force and what cop should not be on the force. And they usually, and to coin a phrase, they usually show their ass within about 3 months of being on the job, 3 to 6 months, let's say 6 months. Heck, let's even say a year of actually being on the street by themselves or with their partner, however it works out in that jurisdiction. Most cops in most jurisdictions ride alone. So after X amount of time, you know, maybe 3 months to a year, you're going to see these guys, let's just call it a year. Within a year, you're going to see them on a rather consistent basis, shift by shift, week by week, month by month. You're going to see them making decisions, either taking the high road or taking the low road. And they're going to start to take a very consistent path. Human beings are very, very predictable. Human beings are very, very consistent in their own particular way. So you can see somebody taking the low road all the time. They shouldn't be a cop. You see somebody taking the high road, well, that's a much better candidate for being a cop. I can't tell you how many times I saw cops do things that I worked with, cops that on my squad. Cops that I had to rely on for my safety, and they relied on me for theirs. But I had to rely on other cops for my safety that I wouldn't trust to drive my kids to school. Because just in regular traffic, they would do things because they were cops. And because they're in a marked unit, they could get away with it. And I got to tell you, that's taking the low road. For this guy, for this New Jersey State Trooper, Robert Higby, to take these two girls' life and then actually to fight it in court, I mean, stand up. Stand up and take a little bit of heed for your actions. I mean, just man up a little bit. You should have done time. And the thing is, State Trooper Higby knows he should have done time. I want to know if this guy's still on the payroll, if he's still a New Jersey State Trooper. If he is, what's his job function? Is he still out there in a unit, driving around, chasing speeders? I got to tell you, you know, there's kind of it exists amongst law enforcement other than highway patrol and state troopers. Everybody but them shares this sentiment, and that is this. Misdemeanor cops in a felony world. Their main job is tickets and accidents. That's it, tickets and accidents. If you're out there and you're a highway patrol officer, state trooper, on the highways of the state that you're in, your job is to write tickets for traffic violations, generally speeding, and to investigate accidents on the state highways. That's it, tickets and accidents. It all has to do with vehicles. Now, there might be some state troopers out there that actually don't operate in a car, and they might actually help out in investigations throughout the state. That's great. Maybe some state money laundering thing or something. Who knows? But if you're in a marked unit, your job is tickets and accidents. Las Vegas Boulevard, the one where all the hotels and casinos are on the strip, that is a state highway. Who has jurisdiction on that state highway? Highway Patrol. Nevada Highway Patrol. They actually have troopers that work the strip. Not very many, but they do have a few. Las Vegas Metro also has a bike squad that works specifically on the strip. Most of the time they're in bikes, unless the weather's lousy, then they'll take cars out. But they are specifically assigned to the strip. And what do? They generally take, you know, in-custody trespassers or something like that. Somebody who's fighting a casino. Security takes them, Metro comes up and handles it. When it comes to the strip, the only thing that the Highway Patrol are supposed to do is investigate accidents and handle traffic violations. Now, the regular police, Las Vegas Metro, they will handle traffic violations as well. And there's actually been, when I was on, my patrol area encompassed the Las Vegas Strip. And I only went there if they called me to come up there, if the bike squad was too busy or something. But part of my area encompassed the Las Vegas Strip. But I stayed off of it because there was a squad dedicated to the Strip. I didn't bother with it very much. Only if I get called up there or the bike guys were busy. I think I've made that clear. I can stop saying it over and over again. When there would be an accident at an intersection that crossed Las Vegas Boulevard, there would literally be discussions. They'd have to analyze this to find out who was really the investigating officer, whether it was going to be someone from Highway Patrol or somebody from Metro. And let me tell you, if there's any way in the world Highway Patrol could get out of it, like say it was at Las Vegas Boulevard and Flamingo Road, if they could say, you know what, it's 51% Flamingo Road, 49% Las Vegas Boulevard, Metro handles it, they would. They'd get out of it. Now, I'm not here to slam troopers. I'm really not. I'm just letting you know kind of the way things are. It's just the way it is. If it comes across as a slam, then that's just the way reality is. This guy is a guy who's going 65 miles an hour in a 35, blows through a stop sign he obviously knows is there because it's part of his beat, hits a minivan, and kills two teenage sisters. And what does he get out of it? He has to pay $700 and some change in fines. That's it. Seven and change with fines, $728. Something tells me that his union probably provided the legal counsel to defend him at the criminal trial. And that is terrible. There was a case here in this country where a SWAT officer, they were doing a raid on a home, and a SWAT officer shot somebody in the kitchen when they turned towards them and had a large spoon in their hand in the kitchen spooning some stuff out. The SWAT cop lit this person up, just seeing something shining in their hand, figured it was probably a gun. That was ruled an excusable shooting, not justifiable, but excusable, which is the lowest element of a shooting in which it's actually considered legal, where you're not going to get prosecuted. I find that to be wrong. Because if you're a SWAT officer, you should ought to know about target identification, looking at the hands, see what's in the hands. If you're going so fast that you can't identify that as not being a gun, you don't have to identify it as a spoon, just identify it as not being a gun. Then take the person into custody, because that's what SWAT do. They roll in, they either shoot you or take you into custody, but they don't just roll past you. So this person would have been taken into custody. Instead, they got shot with a spoon in their hand. No, that's wrong, because SWAT trains to a higher standard. I know if I were on the job and I had shot someone with a spoon in their hand, I wouldn't be able to carry on with the job properly, because I would have known my training wasn't up to the level it should have been. That's what we've got for you. There is another story I'll be reading to you about a couple of New York detectives that set up a couple of immigrants that had to try to prove their innocence. Not the cops prove their guilt, but they had to try to prove their innocence. Stick with me. More to come on 2A Radio. This is Bill Carnes.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right. Before we move on to the next story, I just want to let you know that let's revert back just a little bit to this whole right-wing extremist report that came out from the Department of Homeland Security. Now, pretty much inflamed everybody. Well, sitting up on the web right now, I'm on janetslist.com. If you would like to sign up as someone who has been profiled by the U.S. government to make sure that they actually have the information correct, you can put your name, you can even put your hometown down. It doesn't ask for a bunch of personal information. It is a slam at Janet Napolitano and the Obama administration as a whole through Department of Homeland Security that, yes, you know something? I do believe in government accountability. I do realize that the Federal Reserve is a fraud. I do realize that the president is quite likely not legitimate because he's born in another country. I'm not a firm believer in abortion. I believe that the federal government is out of control. Things such as that. If you fit any of those things, if you are a veteran, any of these things, go to imonjanetslist.com and sign up. One of your fellow listeners from right here on 2A Radio put this site together. I'm on there. He's on there. His family's on there. This thing is up, ready to go. It's fresh. Get on there, sign up, and let them know. You know something? I do believe in family. I do believe in smaller government. And I do believe you people are out of control. So guess what? Here's my name, and I am not afraid to stand up and say it. I happen to be a right-winger. And according to this list, I'm a right-wing extremist. So you know something? I want to make sure you've got all the spelling correct for me. You remember the phone call that I let out. Do you recall that when I actually called Department of Homeland Security? Do you remember that? I actually called them to sign up for the list, and I got sent to a voicemail. So now we have our own list. So join up. I'm on janetslist.com. Okay. Moving on to this next story, it's called Drug Suspects Turn Tables on NYPD with Videotape, out of New York. When undercover detectives busted Jose and Maximo Colon last year for selling cocaine at a CD club in Queens, There was a glaring problem. The brothers hadn't done anything wrong. But proclaiming innocence wasn't good enough for NYPD. The Dominican immigrants needed proof. I sat in jail and thought, how could I prove this? What could I do? Said Jose. As he glanced around a holding cell, the answer came to him. Security cameras. Since then, a vindicating video from the club's cameras had spared the brothers a possible prison term, resulting in two officers' arrest, and became the basis for a multi-million dollar lawsuit. The officers, who are due back in court June 26th, have pled not guilty, and New York Police Department officials have downplayed their case. But the drug corruption case isn't alone. On May 13th, another NYPD officer was arrested for plotting to invade a Manhattan apartment where he hoped to steal $900,000 in drug money. In another pending case, prosecutors in Brooklyn say officers were caught in a 2007 sting using seized drugs to reward a snitch for information. And in the Bronx, prosecutors have charged a detective with lying about a drug bust captured on a surveillance tape that contradicts her story. Elsewhere, Philadelphia prosecutors dismissed more than a dozen drug and gun charges against a man last month when narcotics officers were accused of making up information on search warrants. The revelations in New York have triggered internal affairs inquiries, transfers of commanders, and reviews of dozens of other arrests involving the accused officers. Many drug defendants' cases have been tossed out. Others have won favorable plea dealings. The misconduct strikes at the very heart of our system of justice and erodes public confidence in our courts, said Bronx District Attorney Robert Johnson. Despite the fallout, authorities described the corruption allegations as aberrations in a city where officers daily make hundreds of drug arrests that routinely hold up in court. They also note none of the cases involved accusations of organized crews of officers using their badges to steal or extort drugs or money for personal gain. The storyline of full-blown corruption scandals from bygone eras. Peter Maskos, a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, agrees the majority of narcotics officers probably are clean, but he also believes the city's unending war on drugs will always invite corruption by some who don't think twice about framing suspects they're convinced are guilty anyway. Drugs are a dirty game, Maskos says. Once you realize it's a game, then you start playing with the rules to win the game. Just ask the Cullen brothers. So there you go. More problems. And this seems to be off of the East Coast. We had New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia mentioned. They're not alone. Trust me, guys. They're not alone. More to come when we return from the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes.
1-800-313-9443 with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Today's riot of the day is entitled 545 People by a fellow by the name of Charlie Reese. You can imagine who these 545 are. Politicians are the only people in the world who create problems and then campaign against them. Have you ever wondered if both the Democrats and the Republicans are against deficits, then why do we have deficits? Have you ever wondered if all of the politicians are against inflation and high taxes, why do we have inflation and high taxes? You and I don't propose a federal budget. The president does. You and I don't have the constitutional authority to vote on appropriations. The House of Representatives does. Pardon me, I lost my place on my computer. What a deflation to how it was going with the riot of the day. Can you imagine? That stinks. I'm going to have to work on that. Okay, here we go. You and I don't have the constitutional authority to vote on appropriations. We did that. Okay. To vote on appropriations, the House of Representatives does. You and I don't write the tax code. Congress does. You and I don't set a fiscal policy. Congress does. You and I don't control monetary policy. The Federal Reserve Bank does. 100 senators, 435 congressmen, one president, and nine Supreme Court justices, 545 human beings, out of the 300 million, are directly, legally, morally, and individually responsible for the domestic problems that plague this country. I exclude the members of the Federal Reserve Board because that problem was created by Congress. In 1913, Congress delegated its constitutional duty to provide a sound currency to a federally chartered but private central bank. I exclude all of the special interest and lobbyists for a sound reason. They have no legal authority. They have no ability to coerce a senator, a congressman, or president to do one cotton-picking thing. I don't care if they offer a politician $1 million in cash. The politician has the power to accept or reject it. No matter what the lobbyist promises, it is the legislator's responsibility to determine how he votes. The 545 human beings spend much of their energy convincing you that what they did is not their fault. They cooperate in this common con regardless of party affiliation. What separates a politician from a normal human being is an excessive amount of gall. No normal human being would have the gall of a speaker who stood up and criticized the president for creating deficits. The president can only propose a budget. He cannot force it. He cannot force the Congress to accept it. The Constitution, which has the supreme law of land, gives sole responsibility to the House of Representatives for originating and approving appropriations and taxes. Who is the Speaker of the House? Nancy Pelosi. She is the leader of the majority party. She and fellow House members, not the president, can approve any budget they want. If the president vetoes it, they can pass it over his veto if they agree to. It seems inconceivable to me that a nation of 300 million cannot replace 545 people who stand convinced but present facts of incompetence and irresponsibility. I can't think of a single domestic problem that is not traceable directly to those 545 people. When you fully grasp the plain truth of that 545 people exercise, that 545 people exercise the power of the federal government, then it must follow that what exists is what they want to exist. If the tax code is unfair, it's because they want it unfair. If the budget is red, it's because they want it red. If the Army and Marines are in Iraq, it's because they want them in Iraq. If they do not receive Social Security but are on an elite retirement plan not available to the people, it's because they want it that way. There are no insoluble government problems. Do not let these 545 people shift the blame to bureaucrats whom they hire and whose jobs they can abolish, to lobbyists whose gifts and advice they can reject, to regulators to whom they give the power to regulate and from whom they can take this power. Above all, do not let them con you into the belief that there exists disembodied mythical forces like the economy, inflation, or politics that prevent them from doing what they take an oath to do. Those 545 people, and they alone, are responsible. They and they alone have the power. They and they alone should be held accountable by the people who are their bosses. Provided the voters have the gumption to manage their own employees, we should vote all of them out of office and clean up their mess. This is written by Charlie Reese, who is a former columnist for the Orlando Sentinel newspaper. So, that is the riot of the day. And now I've got a piece called The Axis of Idiots, written by a former Marine. Too bad we don't have folks on Capitol Hill willing to speak out like this guy, J.D. Pendery, a retired Marine Sergeant Major who writes for Random House. He's very eloquent, and as taught by the Marines, he seldom beats around the bush. So he's just going to dime a couple people out. Let's go through this. Jimmy Carter, you are the father of the Islamic Nazi movement. Wow, now that'll grab your attention. You threw the Shah under the bus, welcomed the Ayatollah home, and then lacked the spine to confront the terrorists when they took our embassy and our people hostage. You're the runner in chief. Bill Clinton, you played ring around the Lewinsky while the terrorists were at war with us. You guys got us into a fight with them, and then in Somalia, then you ran from it. Your weak-willed responses to the USS Cole and the first World Trade Center bombing and our embassy bombings in Africa emboldened the killers. Each time you failed to respond adequately, they grew bolder until 9/11/2001. John Kerry, dishonesty is your most prominent attribute. You lied about American soldiers in Vietnam. Your military service, like your life, is more fiction than fact. You've accused our military of terrorizing women and children in Iraq. You called Iraq the wrong war, wrong place, wrong time. The same words you used to describe Vietnam. You're a fake. You want to run from Iraq and abandon the Iraqis to murderers, just as you did in Vietnamese, with the Vietnamese. Iraq, like Vietnam, is another war that you were for before you were against it. John Murtha, you said our military was broken. You said we can't win militarily in Iraq. You accused the United States Marines of cold-blooded murder without proof and said we should redeploy to Okinawa. Okinawa, John, and the Democrats called you their military expert? Are you sure you didn't suffer a traumatic brain injury while you were off building your war hero resume? You're a sad, pitiable, corrupt, and washed-up politician. You're not a Marine, sir. You wouldn't amount to a good pimple on a real Marine's ass. You're a phony and a disgrace. Run away, John. Dick Durbin, you accused our soldiers at Guantanamo of being Nazis, tenders of Soviet-style gulags, and as bad as the regime of Pol Pot, who murdered 2 million of his own people after your party abandoned Southeast Asia to the communists. Now you want to abandon the Iraqis in the same fate? History was not a good teacher for you, was it? Lord help us, see Dick run. Ted Kennedy, for days on end, you held poster-sized pictures of Abu Ghraib in front of any available television camera. Al Jazeera quoted you saying that the Iraqis' torture chambers were open under new management. Did you see the news, Teddy? the Islamic Nazis demonstrated another beheading for you. If you truly supported our troops, you'd show the world poser-sized pictures of the atrocities and demand the annihilation of it. Your legislation stripping support from the South Vietnamese led to a communist victory there. You're a bloated, drunken fool bent on repeating the same historical blunders that turned freedom-seeking people over to the homicidal, genocidal maniacs. To paraphrase John Murtha, all while sitting on your wide, gin-soaked rear end in Washington. Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Carl Levine, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Russ Feingold, Hillary Clinton, Pat Leahy, Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, the Hollywood leftist morons et al. Ad nauseum. Every time you stand in front of the television cameras and broadcast to the Islamic Nazis that we went to war because our president lied, that the war is wrong and our soldiers are torturers, that we should leave Iraq, you give the Islamic butchers, the same ones that tortured and mutilated American soldiers, cause to think that we'll run away again, and all they have to do is hang on a little longer. It is inevitable that we, the infidels, who have to defeat the Islamic jihadists, better to do it now on their turf than later on ours after they have gained both strength and momentum. American news media, the New York Times particularly, each time you publish stories about national defense secrets and our intelligence gathering methods, you become one united with the subhuman pieces of camel dung that torture and mutilate the bodies of American soldiers. You can't strike up the courage to publish cartoons, but you can help Al-Qaeda destroy my country. Actually, you are more dangerous to us than Al-Qaeda is. Think about that each time you face Mecca to admire your Pulitzer. You are America's axis of idiots. Your collective stupidity will destroy us. Self-serving politics and terrorist-abetting news scoops are more important to you than our national security or the lives of innocent civilians and soldiers. It bothers you that defending ourselves in the way of your, bothers you that defending ourselves gets in the way of your elitist support of politics and your arrogant and ignorant editorializing. There is such a blood on your hands as is on the hands of murdering terrorists. Don't ever doubt that. Your frolics will only serve to extend this war as they extended Vietnam. If you want our soldiers home, as you claim, knock off all this crap and try supporting your country ahead of supporting your silly political aims and aiding our enemies. Yes, I'm questioning your patriotism. Your loyalty ends with self. I'm also questioning why you're stealing air that decent Americans could be breathing. You don't deserve the protection of our men and women in uniform. You need to run away from this war and this country. Leave the war to the people who have the will to see it through and the country to people who are willing to defend it. Our country has two enemies, those who want to destroy us from the outside and those who attempt it from within. Semper Fi, J.D. Pandrey, Sergeant Major, USMC, retired. I couldn't agree more. Nicely done, Sergeant Major. That is the riot of the day. Coming out of the 545 people in Washington, D.C., who have the ultimate power of what happens on a federal level within this country. And what they do with that power is make things worse. To have Congress, to have essentially this group of 545 people involved in the takeover of what is now Government Motors, formerly known as General Motors, the single most fiscally irresponsible group of people in the history of the world to take over to try and better a company? You have got to be kidding me. This is the same group that if you give them $10 and say, this is all you have to spend, they will spend that $10. They will actually hold it up in the air and say, hey, look, we've got this $10 to spend. Where should we spend it? And lobbyists will come in and give them money on where they should spend that $10. So once they line their own pockets, they will then take this public $10 and allocate it to places where they made a lot more than that $10. Then, once that $10 is spent, they'll call up the Federal Reserve and say, we need another $10 or $15. So what was originally $10 to spend has now transpired into about $40. Where does this come from? It comes from insanity of people who don't know what they're doing, or rather know what they're doing, and choose to do things incorrectly. They choose to do it wrong. It's time to vote these people out of office, get a new group in there with a whole new set of rules that they should govern by. Otherwise, we have lost all of our powers and all of our rights as the citizens, the true bosses of these servants in D.C. Let's never forget that. More importantly, let's never allow these 545 people to forget it. I'll be back after the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back from the break. So last Friday was the day that I detailed all the pieces, parts of what it takes to build what I refer to as the Ronin AR-15. I've gotten a lot of feedback, a lot of comments on that, a lot of good stuff. And then I've gotten a number of people asking me about all types of little bits and pieces and accessories and little the latest, greatest little doodads and doohickeys. I've got to tell you that about 70 to 80% of the stuff which is sold that has to deal with guns and firearms is designed to be sold, not necessarily used. There's a lot of gimmicky, goofy, stupid stuff out there. One in particular are these really soft-sided holsters. They're just these flappy little thin holsters. As soon as you take a gun out, they fall apart. And they have a little metal clip or plastic clip on them to clip to your waistband. What a total and utter, absolute, complete, how many other words can I come up with, waste of time. What a total waste of time. Because if you're going to pull that thing out in an emergency, I got to tell you, 9 times out of 10, it would seem, that holster is going to come out still attached to the gun. And then what good is it? None. And then to go and reholster, you've got to open it up with your support hand, covering it with your loaded gun in order to get that gun back into the holster. Don't do that sort of thing. That's a gimmicky, stupid little holster that people think they should have. Now, of course, I've got to admit, I've got a drawer full of stuff that I should have never bought. And most of us do. If you've been in this game for a while, if you've had guns and gear for a while, everybody's got a drawer, a couple of spots where they have all the junk where they bought it at one point in time and realized, hey, this isn't any good. Please, if it's the latest, greatest thing, let other people test it out before you put your money. You don't have to keep up with the Joneses. Trust me, financially, that is a lousy way to go. I've known guys who, as soon as something comes out on the front of Guns and Ammo or Gun Digest or something, they go out and order one, if not two, and they've got to have the latest and greatest. I know people that really like a particular gun. Maybe it's a particular shotgun, a particular rifle, a particular handgun. They'll go out and they'll buy three of them. Now, that's a little ridiculous. I have different guns for different purposes. I don't think I have any duplicate guns. Like, I don't own two AR-15s. I've got one. If I did have two, they'd be set up completely differently. All right? I own two different 1911s. However, they're both set up a little differently, and they both serve a slightly different purpose. All of the Glocks that I own, they all are different models. The one Glock I would own a few of would be a Glock 23. I'd keep one in my pack, I would keep one in each of my vehicles, and I would carry one all the time. As it stands, I've only got one Glock 23. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely, as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. I want you to concentrate on the 545 people in D.C. so we can organize to put new people in.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.